RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Michael Cameron is a professor of economics at the School of Accounting, Finance and Economics at the University of Waikato. His current research interests have been summarized as involving sex, drugs, and economies. This is also the title of his blog, Sex, Drugs, and Economics, which he describes as authentic, handcrafted, artisan blog posts on economics and other stuff. And we thought we'd get Michael in on RCR this morning to talk about New Zealand's falling birth rate, which I think many of us are aware of and what that means for us. So Michael joins us now. Nice to have you with us, Michael. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Paul.
Sex, drugs, and economies. What did Sesame Street used to say? One of these things is not like the other. Well, which one is it? I might be surprised by your answer. Who knows?
Well, the title of the blog actually comes from a PhD student from when I was doing my PhD, because at that time I was working on, my PhD was on the links between poverty and HIV in the northeast of Thailand.
Okay.
And I was also working on the social impacts of alcohol. So they said that my research was essentially sex, drugs, and economics.
There's a story behind everything, isn't there?
There really is.
Okay, big picture question first. Should we be worried about our falling birth rate? Or is this just an evolving phenomenon that if people were going to be set free into the workforce and make choices, that this was inevitable? What do you make of it?
I'm not sure that it's necessarily something we need to be worried about. There are aspects of it that we may be concerned about in terms of what's driving it. There's basically, I think, two big drivers going along here. The first one is that children are just really expensive to raise. A few years ago, the investment company Juno estimated that that the cost of raising a child to age 18 was about $265,000, which is quite steep. And you sit that alongside high rents and high mortgages and cost of living and all of these things. It's pretty challenging for a family to raise a child. And the other thing that's sitting alongside that is sort of long-term social change. So we've had women delaying their fertility, delaying their first child, because they want to spend a little bit more time in education or a little bit more time in the workforce. And so if we go back to the 1970s, the age at first birth was around 25 for women, and by now it's well over 30.
Gosh, that's a huge leap, isn't it?
It's a very big change. But New Zealand's not out of step with other countries. Other countries have been seeing these same changes over time.
So it's primarily the cost, do you think?
I think it's a combination of both of those things. So I think women are delaying their fertility, but also because of the cost, they're having fewer children as well.
All right. I see the latest Stats NZ figures, year-on-year births and deaths data released on the 15th of May. So there were 56,277 live births registered, down from 58,707, 37,623 deaths registered, down from 38,835. That's deaths. The fertility rate, and this is the one that whacks you between the eyes, was 1.52 births per woman, down from 1.65. And the infant mortality rate was 3.8 deaths per 1,000 live births, up from 3.5 per 1,000, but down from 4.2 per 1,000 in the year ended March 2022. So that's a quick summary of the bullet points from the main stats released by Stats NZ. So there's no way anywhere near it you can maintain your birth rate or population at 1.52 births per woman. No way.
No, of course, we know that the replacement fertility is about 2.1. We're certainly well below that. But it's worth noting we've been at around replacement fertility or below for a very long time. So New Zealand first dipped below 2.1 in 1978.
Right. Can you correlate that with anything? Can we sync that up with anything that was happening?
I'm not so sure that there was anything specific about 1978 that was special.
Right. I'm trying to remember.
That special about 1978.
Great music, mate.
Oh, for sure. Just part of that long-term social change that we were talking about. So, and then from about 1978 till about the early 2010s, total fertility bounced around a little bit, but it was around about that replacement level. And then we've been declining since then, a decade or more since then.
What is it about Japan? Because we're looking at an example of what, like in real time now, of where this could go, right? Japan.
Japan, yes, also Korea, the lowest fertility rates in the world. So possibly an indicator of where we're going to go sort of demographically.
Yeah. And that drives it. You have less people, and you have less people then making babies, and less people after that making babies. But we've, at the same time, and I think this is Japan, its situation is you've got a population that is living longer now, healthier, let's say, and also a country that doesn't really indulge in too much migration, immigration. So is immigration a kind of answer to that, to our problem?
Some people do think that migration could offset some of the declining birth rate, but the problem is that the migrants are facing a lot of the same things that the native-born population are. So they arrive here, they have face the same sort of cost pressures that everybody else does. And what we know from decades of research is that the fertility rates of migrants tend to converge to the country where they go to. So even if we had migrants from high fertility countries, they would certainly not have as high fertility in New Zealand as they would have had they stayed home.
Because of those impositions that they would encounter. Yeah.
They face the same costs. Their children then have the same sort of aspirations as what the locals do, and so on. So it quickly converges.
Not conducive to making babies.
No.
Okay, so what are the economic consequences then? Because we have to rely on a certain core population to deliver the productivity, to pay the taxes, to raise the next generation. Does that start to become an issue that we should really be concerned about? Because I'm going to be retiring, probably never retire, but I'm heading into that zone, and I want people there who can afford to look after me, is what I'm thinking.
It's not a situation we've been through before, so we don't really know. I think there's a little bit of disagreement amongst economists as to how serious the consequences are going to be, because sitting alongside this, people are working longer, working later into life, and so there's a lot of assistive technologies and so on and there's so much change going on. It's difficult to say for certain, Paul.
Should there be, because I heard Putin say, have babies, you know, and I think they incentivize it. Other countries incentivize whether they subsidize partially or fully one parent to stay at home. So the affordability is there. We talked about that just before. Because at some point, well, what do you do, you know?
So if we look at the most extreme example is Hungary. So Hungary, Viktor Orban, basically made women exempt from tax if they had more than, I believe it's three babies. But they've spent around 6% of GDP on pro-natalist policy, pro-family policy. Mm-hmm. It hasn't increased their total fertility rate, but not back to replacement. So that's an incredibly expensive way of not really achieving what it was you set out to do.
Yeah.
But if we look a little bit closer to home, in 2004, Australia introduced this baby bonus, about $2,500 Australian. It was back in 2004. It's about $5,000 Australian now. But the research suggests that's increased total fertility by about 7%.
Okay.
So again, incredibly expensive way of getting a very small shift in fertility, and you look at Australia's total fertility rate and it's basically identical to ours.
Okay. So that would suggest it's not just, I want to have a baby. There are other things that people want to do. And that's clear from that then, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it comes back to those long-term social changes that have been going on. It's very difficult to shift the tide.
Yeah. It's interesting looking back, way back decades and decades ago, and to see when we had half the population, I think we're talking about the 70s, you had a higher birth rate than now.
Oh, much higher.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in the 70s, it was sort of went from about 2.8 down to just replacement at the end of the 70s.
Yeah. If you were planning at government level, and maybe you have an input into some of this, what would the thinking ahead be, do you think?
Well, I think we need to think about the aging of the population, because that's certainly something that it's going to contribute to. The median age of the population is going to get older. The proportion of the population who are older is going to continue to increase. So we need to be thinking about the types of infrastructure that we have in place, the types of services that we have in place, and what we're going to need for the future.
I think we get a glimpse, or you might get a glimpse, of some of the census data. What, by the end of, well, this week sometime, end of the week?
Yeah, later this week.
Okay, well, that should be interesting. How curious are you?
I'm very curious.
What do you think? You're going to make a call. What do you think, in general terms, do you think that will show?
I don't think it's going to show anything terribly surprising. I mean, we're keen to see what the actual numbers are, but we do know the population's growing. We know that the location of population is changing. We know population's getting older. We know that the population's getting more diverse. All of these things are things that we already know. But being able to put the actual numbers on it, I guess, is the more exciting part of it.
We're not doing things the wrong way, are we? Because it seems that this can degrade to, well, I don't know. I mean, obviously, none of us are going to fade away completely. But, you know, the whole machinery of our existence will inevitably slow down, won't it, as there are less and less people. And, yeah, some sort of future like that.
I'm not sure, Paul.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting to think, isn't it? Because, you know, what happens in that situation, you know, in 20, 30 years' time?
So much of life is changing.
Yeah.
So many of the things, I mean, if we look back 20 or 30 years, things don't look the same now as what they did
then. Oh, I want them back, though. Bring it back. Put me in the time machine. Anything else that you want to comment about on this before we wind up the chat? Any other stats that I didn't mention that are worth noting?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it, Paul.
Okay. Interesting to look at, though, eh?
Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. He's walking down the street and no one knows that guy just walked past knows everything about the birth rate and where it could lead us. Hey, I want to thank you so much for coming on RCR and explaining that, and we'll see what the census figures say. And hopefully we can chat about economics again, Michael. Michael Cameron, Professor of Economics, University of Waikato. And his blog is Sex, Drugs, and Economics. Thank you, Michael, for coming on.
Thanks, Paul.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.